Are you recording right now?
Yeah, I'm recording.
Anyway, this is our lead-in. This is our lead-in. We're doing one of these tonight. Great.
We're doing one of these tonight.
We've both got the giggles. Adam has the giggles.
CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 416. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, I don't know why I had the giggles. You're just like, I'm ready to go. You know, I don't know what that voice was.
That's not the sound I just made, but that's cool.
Yeah, it was something like that. Whatever.
Okay. You're just giggly. Sound.
Like a I am girl. Giggly tonight. Yeah, yeah. Something like that. So, Matt, let's just roll into this.
Yeah, let's just...
Hey, you know, some of us, you know, puberty is hard, and it lasts for decades.
It's a special time in your life.
We'll talk about it later. Matt, let's go right into the tweet bag tonight.
Tweet bag.
So Gary Payne, that's at FastBreakGP on Twitter, and if you want to tweet us, you could do so at BYU underscore Rice Shop. He has two questions for us. This references some of our recent conversations on the show. He says, Adam wins a three-point shooting contest. Yes. Between you and I, right?
Correct.
Not like in general. Matt wins a foot race. Also true. But
of any distance.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I can't imagine I'm beating you in sprints, let alone the long distances. But who wins in a battle of wit? And if wit, I'm assuming he means like humor.
Oh, no, I thought it was like a battle of wits. And I was going to say I would win because I've spent the last several years developing an immunity to Iocane powder.
Okay. Nice movie reference. I appreciate it.
Come on! Really? That's clearly what he's referencing here. That's a Princess Bride reference. Inconceivable!
You didn't get
that joke. Come on, man.
Okay, so Gary and Matt have been meaning that joke. I will say this, though. If it's intelligence or humor, I win both of those.
Like I said, I've spent the last several years developing an immunity to Iocane powder. So I win.
So, no, seriously. If we had to tell jokes for half an hour and keep people laughing,
yeah, but you told jokes, like, professionally for some period of time, right? So, like, you've got material that you could fall back on.
I do have a lot of material. Yes,
I have a couple of silly stories, many of which I probably shouldn't share in front of large audiences but are funny.
Hmm.
And, anyway, whatever.
All right. Well, anyway, he says now, more important maybe, is who wins in a battle of random BYU sports facts, hashtag tweetbag, hashtag payback. Matt, I don't know. I can't say I can claim clear superiority for that.
I think the three-point shooting contest is clear. The foot race is clear. Battle of wit, either of the scenarios you talked about, I'm willing to make a debate out of it. But a battle of random BYU sports facts, I mean, you clearly win. You're like a sports encyclopedia. That's true. That way since we were little. There's no way that I don't think I would compete here. Like, so, it was across sports, across time? There's no way I have the backlog of information that you've got up in that noggin. Now, let's just call it what it is.
What about if it's about the 1996 football team? Then you win. If it's facts about them.
Smoke you. I memorized the entire press guide that year.
Yeah.
I may not be able to recall all of it. But come on.
Cool. All right. Thank you, Gary, for your questions. Very good. Keith Smith sent us a question on Facebook. And if you want to join the conversation on Facebook, you can do it at facebook.com/writesandshout. Keith says, who wins a BYU free throw contest if all the other sports sent their best shooters to compete against each other, minus both basketball teams? I say the Spirit Squad. Is that still a thing? I mean, are they called the Spirit Squad or are they called cheerleading?
So is he talking about the cheerleaders when he says that? Or is he talking about like Will Ferrell and what's her face? I mean,
Hey, do you know there's a new Will Ferrell movie?
What are we
talking about? Eurovision?
Yes, with girl from, Rachel, I think McCaffrey. She's from The Notebook.
I believe she is. Great. Wow, look at it all coming together.
Adams, that's her name, right? I think she's great. I've seen several movies that she's in, including Mean Girls, and she's great.
Yeah, she's awesome. I can't wait to see that movie. But going back to this question, which team do you think wins that contest? He's going with the cheerleaders. I'm going to go with, I bet you the football team has some really good high school basketball players on it.
Yeah, see, that's where I went too, right? Like a lot of these receivers, these tall guys probably played basketball in high school. Let's see. I'm just going down I'm actually looking at the roster here. I'm trying to find somebody who they say like lettered in basketball or something. But I'm guessing that it's going to be a football player. Because mostly volleyball players don't play basketball, right?
Yeah, not totally, but yeah, that's usually a fairly safe conclusion. You're picking one sport or the other. And then otherwise, you might just have like on the golf team or any of the women sports outside of basketball, you just may have somebody that was a really good high school basketball player that could compete, right?
I'll give you one right now. Blake Freeland, right? Who's a 6'8", 300-pound offensive lineman out of Harriman, Utah, right? And I think I've talked about this kid before. But he was a all-state basketball player in Utah.
Doesn't mean he can shoot free throws, though.
State champion in shot put, javelin. I bet you he can shoot free throws.
I bet you can. You're probably right. So I'm going to go with the football team, Keith. That's my choice. That's my choice. So next question also came off Facebook. It was from Randy Whittle. He says, what will we get first, a college football game or a blockbuster film release? As you know, Matt, the studios keep pushing these movies back, like Mulan, Black Widow, Tenet, and others keep getting pushed back. And AMC and other movie theaters are also continuing to push back when they will reopen theaters. And, of course, we've got states like Arizona and your state of Texas that seem to be going a little backwards on opening things up. If you had to put money on one or the other, which one are you going for? So we get Tenet and or Mulan, or we get the first college football game of the season? Which comes first?
I think a blockbuster film release, because there's multiple formats for that I think work across a variety of scenarios. So I just think it's easier to do depending on what the way the rest of this takes shape than putting on a college football game.
Yeah, I'm going with movies as well, because I think here's what happens. I think come hell or high water, at some point later this summer, the movie theaters open up, even if they're only opening up in selected states, right, where there's not a lot of COVID-19 going on. And then they release digitally so that people in other places can access it, right?
Right, right.
So anyway, thank you for the question, Randy. Next question comes from...
But I tell you, I've been looking forward to a couple of those movies. Let's get this going. I mean, I'm more excited about college football probably, but like both the movies you just listed, I would like to see them.
Yeah, so Tenet looks fantastic. And of course, Christopher Nolan knows how to make good movies. He's done it basically every time. Does he have any duds? I don't think he has a single dud. I think he's got ones I like more than others, but I don't think he has a dud.
Huh. Yeah, I'd have to do research on the Google machine for that one, but just like a quick look here. I don't think
so. Where are you, Andre? Andre will have a strong opinion on this. But I don't think he has any.
So I'm just running down the list.
Christopher Nolan.
If I go back pre-Memento, I'm just not familiar with the three or four movies that are listed there.
Yeah, so as a director, I am not either. So let's start at Memento. I didn't see Insomnia. Memento is fantastic. Batman Begins. Fantastic. The Prestige. Fantastic. I love The Prestige. Do you like The Prestige?
Actually, I haven't seen it. Not going to lie.
Oh, it's good. The Dark Knight, of course, we both like. Inception. I love Inception. Dark Knight Rises. I will say I have not seen Interstellar. I own it, and I have not watched it. I can't ever find like this 2.5-hour time period. I need to do that. Dunkirk. Did you see Dunkirk?
I've seen half of Dunkirk, and I need to see the second half. This is something I was watching recently and got interrupted, so I'm going to finish it probably later this week.
So no duds that I have seen. No duds. All right. Let's move on here to the next question. It comes from Simon via email. If you want to email the podcast, you can do it at risenshoutpod@gmail.com. Simon says, Dear Rise and Shout Podcast, what do you think of Yoli Child's hot take on BYU Sports Nation? This was from like a week ago. Also, will the BYU basketball team be as exciting as last year's team? What was Child's hot take? Is that his stuff about social justice and that stuff?
I think, yeah. Is it the conversation he had about his experience at BYU as a black student?
Yeah. I think
I know we posted some stuff on Instagram. I know we posted some stuff on Instagram about it, and so he made some social media statements. I did not. I didn't listen to a BYU Sports Nation clip interview.
I didn't either.
No, but I've read some articles that talk about it. And I read what he wrote on social media, but I don't know.
Yeah. To answer your other question, I think they will be as exciting as last year's team. I don't know if they'll be as good or not. It's hard to say because there's so much turnover, right? And not that I don't have faith in Mark Pope and his staff to put all of these pieces coherently together. But I, you know, and obviously we've got Lohner and Wade and, you know, all of these pieces that weren't part of last year's team that you got to put together. But what do you think? Will they be as exciting and will they be as good?
So let me answer. I'm going to go back to the first question and then, cause I think I found something else. But so the first one is if it's the stuff they wrote on social media, I think that goes back to, you know, a conversation we had a couple weeks ago, right? Where we've got to listen to people who are living that experience that's maybe different than say what the experience I had at BYU. We've got to listen to people's telling of how that has felt for them, and we need to understand that. So I think that's important. He may have said, I have a memory of him saying something where he was quoted as believing that this year's basketball team is going to be as good or better than this last year's team. I think he said something like that. So if that's what we're referencing, because that would make sense with the second question that Simon asked. I think that this basketball team has some real promise. I think this is a team that can make a real run. Obviously, last year's team we felt like could be historically good for BYU. I'm not sure that I'm sold that this team coming up is quite that good, but they might be. Do I believe this team could be every bit as exciting down the stretch to watch? Absolutely. So maybe I'm just a little bit higher on the basketball team than you are.
I don't think you're higher on them than I am. I think we're saying the same thing. I just, there's so many moving pieces, right? I think it's hard to put it all together. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to know what they'll look like. So look at this year's roster, okay? And I think Jeff Call, put together, you know, hey, here's what the roster looks like now that we know what's going on, right? And you look at the players on there. You've got Averett, okay? What role is he going to play, right? We know a lot about him because he's already played college basketball before, right? And assume he's going to play a role similar to what he did at UVU last year. Okay, cool. Barcelo, how much is he going to take over that Toulson role or not? I don't know, right? That's kind of been the assumption, but that was before a lot of these other guys were added.
Right.
You know, Baxter, I think what's his role going to be? Harms, I think we know what his role will be, right? He's played years of college basketball. He was brought in to be the big tall guy that in the middle that, you know, causes problems for other teams. What's Harding's role going to be? How much is Lohner going to be a guy this year that learns and plays, you know, 50, we talked about this, right? 15 to 20 minutes, or is this guy by the end of the year going to be playing 25 or 30, right? And obviously Jesse Wade, is he the one that actually ends up leading the team in scoring? there's just so many questions, and I didn't even go through the whole roster, right? Where I would say, I think this team has as high an upside as last year's team. Maybe a little higher, but I think their floor could be also lower because of all these unknowns and, you know, and obviously injuries and all that stuff. Put all that aside, because that could happen in any year, right?
Right.
But it's kind of crazy.
I think it's an exciting time for BYU hoops.
Yeah, it is. And it's and Lowell, like, I didn't even mention Lowell. Like, you know, look at Lowell and Harms and Harward on the – what if you put the three of them on the floor at the same time? You probably wouldn't. But you could.
You might, depending on what you're up against, what the situation is. I mean, that's
yeah,
I think you got to be open to a wide variety of scenarios here, because I think if you just, you know, if you play back some of the stuff you just walked through, I think there's a story here about depth. There's a story here about how these players are going to interact and fit as pieces playing with one another, that while we may not know all the answers to that, it certainly does appear that we've got some great pieces.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, some really talented athletes, you know, from freshmen to grad transfers. And so I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about what this team may be able to do.
Yeah, for sure. Next question is also an email question from a couple weeks ago that somehow I neglected to put in the agenda. So Johnny Ashton reminded me of said fact, and I put it in this week's agenda. We do more than one show a year. He says, thanks for keeping me entertained, especially while we are in lockdown. A couple of questions for your next podcast. If you can pick any college football player from this upcoming season to immediately transfer to BYU without having to sit out a year, who are you taking? Same question for basketball. And he says, by the way, I recently turned 40, so I've been informing my family, I'm a man. I'm 40. But you have a mullet, Johnny. Do you have a mullet? Think you have to have a mullet to say it. Do you have to have a mullet? You should
stop me.
You should have a mullet.
I can't really grow like a traditional mullet. I can grow like a Michael Bolton in the 90s mullet.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what you should do.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That's a terrible idea.
Your suggestion is awful. It will change my life in nothing but negative ways.
Listeners, let's hear the support for the Matt mullet.
Oh, all boy. Right. Here we go. I cannot wait for this to hit Twitter.
Let's hear the support for the Matt John, the Michael Bolton-esque mullet. But anyway, let's get to this question, Matt. Who would you add in college football? Is there a player that you would add to this year's BYU team?
You know, I can't even decide which one I would take. If I could take anyone... I'd probably take Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I think that's a good choice. You know, it's nothing against the players that we.
No, it's just that he may be the best player in college football right now. So, I mean, that's who I would take.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, other guys that I think about here, unless you want to throw who you would take out first. I mean, I've got a couple other guys I would think about.
No, I would say my choice was also Trevor Lawrence. I think if BYU could get the best quarterback in all of the land, you would make that choice, right? Before you chose anybody else.
I think I could get behind taking Justin Fields.
Oh, sure.
But if I'm going to take a quarterback, if I'm taking a quarterback, it's probably Trevor Lawrence. But the other one I would think about, and a guy that I really liked, is Travis Etienne from Clemson as well, this running back.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's the real deal.
Yeah, yeah. I think that makes sense to me, either of those choices. And there's some really good defensive players you could pick too, right? But I think you're picking one of the quarterbacks. I think you're picking Fields or Lawrence. And for me, it's Trevor Lawrence. I think he's the best. Nothing against Fields.
I think Fields will be great, but Lawrence is probably going to win the Heisman Trophy. And may win a national championship and probably go with the first pick in the draft.
Yeah. So who would you pick in college basketball? I've got a couple ideas. If I've been thinking about this one since I saw Reese saw his question.
Why don't you go ahead and go first on that one?
All right. So a couple of choices, right? You could do something. I think the best player going into next year is Luka Garza from Iowa, right?
Yep.
I think that's a safe choice. And he's obviously a fantastic, fantastic basketball player and would make BYU eminently better. And quite frankly, with the roster, we have a Final Four type contender, I believe. Okay. You've got other guys like that, like Malachi Flynn from San Diego State, which would have the added benefit of you taking and making San Diego State worse. So you got that one. And you also could say in that same category of making one of your rivals worse is to take Protrusiv from Gonzaga. Right? So either of those work for me. You could also go the route of go get one of the one and dones that are incoming. Right? Jalen Green or let's see, Nick Richards. No, he's a senior. I'm reading off the wrong list here. But you know, go get one of those one and dones that is coming in. You could go that route too, right? So those are just a couple of ideas.
I think there's a couple. Like, what about this Cade Cunningham guy at Oklahoma State?
Sure. Yeah.
I think I've seen him as a favorite in a couple of places. I don't know. That's tough. Especially with the one and dones, it's really hard, right? Because it's just hard to predict who there is really going to hit.
Yeah. But I like Cade Cunningham. That's a good choice, actually. You add a 6'7" point guard to your team, to this team that we have here. With some of the sharpshooters, that would create massive matchup problems in the West Coast Conference. Who's going to guard
him? What if you went local and did you take Jalen Suggs off away from Gonzaga? Do you think about that?
I did not. I thought about it, but no, I did not mention that.
But that's another one too, right?
Yep.
That's the same double whammy impact.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Taking doing something like that has all the feels to it, right? Makes you feel good about it. There's some great choice. I mean, obviously, this is in basketball, you put Trevor Lawrence on the BYU Cougars, we're not winning a national championship. You put one of these elite basketball players on the basketball team, and I think you've got, I don't know that it makes you like the favorite or one of the top contenders, but it puts you in that conversation just by adding one of the top 10 guys in college basketball. And that's, again, we're going to get into this in a second because our big why is about, you know, basketball and football and some of the differences and all that stuff. Now, anyway, great question, by the way, Johnny. Sorry we took a couple of weeks to answer it. You are a man. You are 40. The next one is, of course, somebody did what we've been doing for years. Pat Ford did, and here's the thing: I think I did a better job when the last time I did it. But anyway, John Brame, that's at Johnny Dangerman on Twitter, had this to say: Pat Ford recently published a big realignment piece where he suggested 10 12-team conferences. Obviously, this will never happen. I wouldn't say that. I would say the probability is extremely low, but I don't know that it would never happen. But is there any way this realistically could? What would be the pros and cons? And do you think there are any realistic realignment scenarios out there? So lots packed into John's question. So let's first look at Pat Ford's realignment. Okay, he relegates how many teams? I forget. He relegates 11 current FBS teams to the FCS and elevates North Dakota State. So he gets rid of, who cares? It's a bunch of teams we don't care about. Liberty, by the way, is gone. But I would relegate Wyoming, who ends up in the conference with us. and then he divides them into geographically based conferences. Now, you and I have already done this before on the podcast years ago. What, like 5 years ago? Did we do this?
Yeah, we did this a while ago.
So it's been a long time, maybe even longer than that. But Pat did fine. I was just kind of making fun of it. But the Rocky Mountain Conference is where BYU lands in this scenario, right? Am I missing this?
Yep. Yeah, I got you there in Rocky Mountain.
Air Force, Arizona, Arizona State, Boise, us, Colorado, Colorado State, New Mexico, UNLV, Utah, Utah State, and Wyoming. Now, he does it geographically. You and I did not. I mean, we used geography, but we divided by like kind of the long-term health of the program, so you had them a little bit more evenly divided than what he did. But if you look, he did have them. He does have a lot of the powers divided, right? So, do you like where BYU landed? Do you like that conference, that Rocky Mountain conference that Pat Ford put together in his hypothetical realignment scenario?
This is the old WAC.
It's the old WAC. I mean, there's some exceptions.
Arizona State, Arizona, right? But in Colorado, but those aren't like, you know, those aren't like Pac-12 powerhouses. I mean, historically they've had some good teams. Arizona State has been good. Colorado was good once.
Colorado was good
in the last 30 years.
In our lifetime, yeah.
So I mean, it's not bad. I think we'd be competitive in that conference. If you were to just start that conference today with these teams, I think we'd be making a run every year.
Yeah. I think
now would probably be the best team. Utah would probably be the best team in this conference.
Utah or Boise. I mean, and the class of this conference is Utah and Boise, right? The programs that have been the most consistent winners recently. Obviously, Arizona and Arizona State have some momentum from, you know, recruiting and different things going on. Colorado's a disaster. You know, UNLV, Wyoming, in different states of their ups and downs. What I would say is this conference does not excite me in the fact that it's not the best on this board. But the flip side to that is, to your point, BYU could be competitive in it immediately versus if you put us in some type of other realignment scenario where we're basically added to a P5 where you don't have any non P5 schools in the conference.
And if I look like, if I just look at the way he has them broken down, and I think, say we slip BYU into the Pac, what he's calling the Pac-12 conference with Stanford, USC, Washington, Oregon, Washington State, you know, and these teams, I think we would have a better chance in his Rocky Mountain Conference than that conference.
Yeah, but that conference still has Fresno, Hawaii, Nevada, San Diego State.
And Stanford and USC aren't world beaters right now. You know, nobody in that conference really is. So I think we'd be probably maybe just as competitive there.
So looking at all the other conferences,
it's actually pretty equitable if I look through all these conferences. I mean, they're all
Ford has done a pretty good job. And his arguments of, listen, this would just make for stronger rivalries and easier travel, right? Because your schedule is going to be, you just play the people in your conference and one out of conference. The pros and cons of his scenario, though, Matt, I think one of the biggest cons is the fact that he's only got set up one out-of-conference game per team per year. And I think that's a con, because I think one of the cool things is those out-of-conference games, and there just would be very few of them you know, out there. But the flip side of that is you've got it set up like, look at the Southwest Conference. It's all the Texas schools in one freaking conference.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, heck, if you're UT, you don't leave Oklahoma and Texas, right?
Right. Can you imagine the rivalries that you would build?
Yeah.
I mean, he has Texas's non-conference opponent as being Arkansas, right? So you would get to Arkansas and you'd have a game, you know, you'd have a game or two in Oklahoma every year.
I forget what was BYU's non-conference opponent?
Was it Cal? I think it was Cal. Yeah, it was Cal.
That I don't like that.
But no, I would pick that. A different one, or maybe you rotate them, right? You rotate them, so it's not, maybe it's not the same one every year, because Notre Dame would have, you know, who do you, you know, they've got Notre Dame as USC's non-conference opponent, but they were also listed as Northwestern's non-conference opponent. So you'd have to do a little bit of work around this. No, they weren't. That's Stanford. So maybe no.
So Notre how Dame about the Great Midwest Conference, which is Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, Iowa, Iowa State, Kansas, Kansas State, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Western Michigan, right? That W there.
Which one?
The Great Midwest.
Oh, there you go.
And Wisconsin. North Dakota State is automatically a contender to win that league in year one. It'd be fascinating to watch there. And he talks about you could revisit who's actually in and out every few years, right?
Yeah, if you fired that up today, you'd have, that would be a run between North Dakota State, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and maybe Iowa gets in that mix.
Yeah. Yeah,
that'd be a fun conference.
It'd be a fun conference. I actually like what he did here. I mean, there's obviously some traditional rivalries that get, you know, Notre Dame's rivalries get butchered here, right? Because they obviously can't play all those teams. But, you know, where they ended up, because they ended up in which conference? Where are they? Mid-American Conference. You know, they're, are they with any of their traditional rivals? No.
Yeah, they would keep their USC game.
They would keep their USC game, but
the rest of these are new.
Actually, the Mid-American Conference is kind of wah, wah. That would not be my favorite conference.
Yeah, you need Tennessee would have to get good again.
Oh, I just mean like none of these schools are connected, right? Like you've got Illinois, Kentucky, Louisville, obviously those two, yes. Marshall, Middle Tennessee. I mean, geographically, they're all together, and some of them have some connections, but Notre Dame doesn't have a connection to a single school in that conference.
Right.
I mean, academically, maybe with Northwestern, but that one's kind of a meh, meh. I do like the Mid-Atlantic, though. That one's got some cool. And the Deep South and the fact that Alabama would be in a one called the Sun Belt is fantastic to me.
I feel like he did that on purpose. But it's this Sun Belt conference is good. LSU, Auburn, Alabama, Mississippi State, Ole Miss.
Oh, it's the best conference. It's the best conference in there, I think. I mean, the Deep South is not terrible either, and the great Mideast has quite a bit of power too, right? Because you keep Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State all together and throw in you know, a couple of other okay programs in the midst there. I don't know. I like his stuff. If we go like in general, and then he does his playoff, like he predicts the playoffs. Where is
playoffs?
The playoff one? I don't think it's in this article. I think it was a separate article. But he has a 12-team playoff, right? Is that right? 12-team playoff? Did I misquote that? Or is it like 14?
I'd have to go down and look.
Anyway, he has a playoff where the top four teams get a bye. All of the conferences get, all 10 of the conferences get, their winner goes in, and then you get two at large. No conference championships. So you got to win your freaking conference because you play everybody, right? And I love that.
Well, and then another point he makes here is like strength of schedule is no longer an argument.
Right.
Because the parity across these conferences is pretty close. And then you use that to seed your playoffs.
And strength of schedule comes into effect when you pick your two at-large teams, right? Sure. If you've got if that Sun Belt conference has three of the best teams in the land, then two of them get to go. And the team that finishes third, you had your shot. Right? And you can whine about it all day, but you know, but if you know, that Sun Belt Conference is going to get, if you did this for this season, that Sun Belt Conference is going to get two teams in, right? Between Auburn, LSU, and Alabama, right? One of those, you're going to get LSU and Alabama are going to get two of those spots, would be my guess. But I like his, I like the setup. Now, to his is there any way it could happen? I think there are doomsday scenarios, legally speaking, in which the NCAA would have to take this all over in order to maintain the amateur nature of college sports. I don't think that's likely, but I think there could be a argument made legally that these conferences are acting like cabals, you know what I mean? And legally, right, you could go after them. But yes, this is not likely to happen.
Is there a scenario where, probably not, but where they're forced financially to move in this direction? I think the gap between the haves and the have-nots is probably wide enough that the haves could live in a different scenario, right? I don't think Alabama's going to be in a situation where they're going to say, you know what, I need to be in a conference where my travel is lessened, you know, and those types of things. But some of these other schools could really benefit from that. And I think we're seeing that now, is, you know, with the threats of seasons being canceled, and you watch, you know, some of these schools that are cutting sports, and, you know, this isn't happening at the D1 level, but some D3 schools have already announced that they're not going to do sports in the fall.
Yeah.
So, do you get a scenario where financially something like this makes more sense for everybody?
I don't think so. I mean, think of it this way. What's Vanderbilt's incentive to do something like this? It's zero.
Right.
Right? They get all of this SEC money. What's Nebraska going, you know, they go to this great Midwest conference. Why would they do it? Right? What Pat's proposing and what you and I have proposed in the past is probably the best thing for college football from an aesthetic and competitive landscape perspective, right? And it eliminates some of the unfair advantages that have developed over time because of a conference system that consolidated power in these five conferences, right? But in the end, I think the more likely scenario is the P5 kicking everybody else out. Right. Then 110
right.
And then
you've
teams
got like a
staying.
You have another subdivision. Right.
The other problem is he's got a few teams here that, quite frankly, I just don't know. I don't know if they're 110 worthy teams.
I would have relegated a larger number of teams. And I would have done it smaller. I think if I were to start fresh today and build this, I mean, so who did he relegate? San Jose State, New Mexico State, UTEP,
yeah, all those
UTSA,
all those
would go. I would also send UMass. I'd send UConn. I'd send Louisiana Lafayette. You know, I'd probably send Georgia State and Florida Atlantic, Charlotte for sure. Old Dominion.
North Texas?
I'd probably send North Texas.
Wyoming.
I'm just scrolling up through his conferences here.
UNLV.
I might send Rice. Northern Illinois, Western Kentucky.
The question is, would you actually
There's
be
a lot
healthier?
Of schools. I would probably take another two or three 20? Schools from each of these conferences and send them down.
Yeah, yeah. So you're looking at another 20 teams, and you take it down to 90, right? And divide into 10 9-team conferences, right?
Then you can play a couple of more off out of
play
conference
a few
games.
More out of conference games, that kind of stuff. But again, now we're just nitpicking with his. In general, I think we are aligned with the principles that he used to put these together. Even if
the geographic lineup, I think, yeah, it would be optimal. But you're never going to get there because of the money.
No, you're never going to get there. The other parts to answer John's question. I think there are realistic scenarios out there. I think they include getting it down to like 60, right? Is where you see the P5 kind of and this new TV contract reorientate themselves and basically lock out the group of five teams, which would mean that they would either have to go to FCS or create kind of their own subdivision, right? And that's the scenario that I think a lot of BYU fans cringe at, because the question is, would BYU, even though in most respects we are a P5 quality program, would we end up on the outside looking in that scenario and not be part of the big party? And that's the, you know, that's the, I think, is quite frankly the most realistic, like, scenario of a massive shift in conferences. And it's not one that will make BYU fans feel warm and fuzzy. But as I said, I think the most likely way this happens is some type of lawsuit where somehow the conferences aren't allowed to exist anymore. And again, like I said, I don't see that as a likely scenario by any stretch. All right, last question we have today is from Wade Hillam. He says, the pipeline of Rick's college football was mentioned a few weeks back, and I'm curious of your thoughts. Well, good. You're listening to the right show if you're curious about what we think.
You also should probably seek professional help.
No doubt of that. Is it just a coincidence that during Rick's glory days, BYU was also dominant? I know there are tons of factors, but I can't help but think that stopping sports at Rick's really hurt BYU. So, Matt, is the connection, is there, we talked about that, is there, you know, would BYU be more, would BYU football be better if Rex was still a junior college playing junior college football and kind of acting as a pipeline for BYU?
I absolutely believe that BYU would be better in that scenario. What I don't have is data, right, to back that up. I've not gone and looked up, you know, how many players per year and at what position were coming up. I think we made some references to a lot of like line positions that seemed to be, you know, we'd get a lot of offensive linemen coming through there. Typically, you know, if you go back during that period of time and you look at some of the quarterbacks and other skills positions, those players weren't necessarily getting coming through Rick's College down to Provo. But I think that absolutely impacts the way the program works when that pipeline goes away. I think a lot of guys, you know, it scatters out guys that would have been that may have been collected in a single place when that existed. It scatters them out, and then they have different options, and they have different coaching, and they have a whole different experience, and I think that impacts the whether or not they end up in Provo.
Yeah, I think you're right on most of those effects. I think the world has changed so much since then that it would benefit BYU. I just don't know how much, and here's why I think that. Back then, recruiting wasn't as good as it is today. You didn't have scouts, you didn't have tape on every player, and you ended up getting guys in junior college that quite frankly belonged somewhere else. They just didn't have the tape, they didn't have the buzz to get someplace else. You just don't see as many misses nowadays where people are ending up in junior college, right? Where you see in junior college today is more academics or other issues that force someone to go to a JUCO in order to, you know, realize their dreams of playing Division I football, right? And the other part is, if you can't play Division I football nowadays, you're going to go to a high-quality FCS school, right? You're not going to go to a junior college. You can still transfer if you wanted, but I just think recruiting's better. All of that being said, I think if you had a JUCO that was run by the church and was kind of loosely affiliated with BYU, that would benefit BYU.
Like, isn't it shared the same name?
Yes. I think that would benefit BYU, and I think you'd get players regularly there, especially maybe ones that academically couldn't get into BYU, and you could give them a chance to go into college and get things together and then transfer over. I think it would benefit, like you said. I think it would be. I just don't think you would see the same effect like you saw back in the day. And if you look at BYU's all-time great players, you're not going to see a lot of Rick's transfers. Right. There's a couple of exceptions to that. But
the real meat and potatoes for the Rick that I think the Rick's pipeline. Again, I don't have data, so this is just anecdotal in my head. But I do think that it wasn't skills players. You know, but it was guys who were doing some of the real basic blocking and tackling that you need to do to win football games.
Yeah, but even the great.
And it was a pretty good JUCO program. I mean, it was a JUCO program that was competing nationally.
Yep.
Which I think also, you know, that And so if you could have been a coaching change away from that not being true, and then that it's no longer producing that pipeline for you, right? So there's a lot of things that could have caused that to go away. But at the same time, what you don't see happening is you don't see the same I don't get the feeling that we have the same type of pipeline coming out of Snow College, right? I'm just thinking about, you know, another relatively geographically close junior college program. Those players that used to getting funneled to Rick's for the points that you were making earlier, I think are just going to different places now. And the transfer rules are different, which might make you think about make a decision between going to junior college or going to FCS differently.
Yeah, sure.
There's just so much. You're right. I mean, so much has changed.
Yeah, I don't think BYU isn't as good of a program as they used to be in football because they don't have Rick's, right? I don't think that's in your top five of reasons BYU isn't as good as they were when Lavelle Edwards was the coach, right?
I'd love to have a pipeline like that again.
Yeah. Big why for this week comes from Tim Jacobson. He's got an email for us. He says, hey guys, BYU basketball is better than Utah basketball. Shocker.
Facts. Hashtag facts.
Utah football is better than BYU football. Hard to argue that at the moment.
I'm not hashtagging that.
Don't hashtag it. Reason, 100% coaching, Tim says. P5 or not, honor code or not. Pope's showing it just takes leadership, scheme, and winning to recruit and make a program. I hope Kalani and staff are taking note. So, Matt, what I wanted to do is let's go over each of us a couple of things that Kalani and his staff can learn from Pope and a couple of things that are not transferable. Okay? So I want you to think of one thing on each of those categories. We'll each do one thing. All right? So I'll give you a chance to think a little bit. I am going to go first. Because I'm magnanimous.
Okay. You are magnanimous.
Giving you time to think. Because I didn't put that exact phrase in the agenda like I meant to. So, what he can learn from him, I will agree with him on scheme. Okay? I think scheme is important. And I think Pope came in with a very, very potent idea of what the identity of his team would be, and he had executed it as a head coach and with some of the same staff at UVU. And they came and they were able to do that. It's a fun style, all that other stuff, but he knew what his scheme would be. I think Satake could really benefit from defining what he wants to be on both sides of the football and then executing that vision with his staff. Okay, what for you, what is another thing that Kalani can learn from Mark Pope?
I think it's that winning creates momentum. And I'm not saying that Kalani doesn't know that, but I think it might cause you to think about things you're doing a little bit differently when you realize that success is gonna create more success. And players want to come and to a program that is winning games and making some noise on a national scene. And so if you can focus on, you know, then I get into a lot of coaching platitudes at this point, but if you get into, you know, you look at your individual games and you just got to focus on getting up to 9-10 wins a season. If you can start doing that a season or two, consistently, players want to come and play for you because you're a winner. And that's where players want to go. Yeah. And that's what we're seeing here. You got guys, these players, you know, when you look at all these guys that are saying, hey, I want to come over and I want to come and play in Provo and some of these transfers and other stuff. Yeah, we've got scholarships, which helps. But they're looking at schools with a potential spot, and they're looking at schools that are going to win and make tournament runs. And so when you make a list of teams that have available scholarships and look like they could be winners, yeah, this team looks like this is a program on the rise that's going to win and put these guys in a position to do something fun. And that's why the players are looking to come to Provo and play basketball. So yeah. I think you got to just focus on winning games. That's your culture, win games.
Yep. On the other side, here's one thing I think you cannot take away, and that is recruiting. I'm not saying that Pope isn't doing a good job in recruiting. He's obviously doing a very good job. You can retool a basketball roster in one season. You cannot do that in football through recruiting. You just can't, right? You just, especially at BYU with the missions, but even if you're talking about take that out, this is not something that happens in a year from a recruitment standpoint. Now, scheme, like I said before, is different. Teams have transformed themselves through scheme, right, with the same talent they had before. Look at Boise State, early 2000s. Look at Central Florida. Heck, look at early Nick Saban, Alabama, before he had all of the horses and recruits that he has now, right? You can do a lot of things through a scheme. What you can't replicate, though, from, you know, basketball to football is recruiting. I mean, he's got you know, 12, 15 roster spots. Sataki's got to feel like 70, right? And, you know, it's just so different that I don't know if, besides the winning component, which you just talked about, which I totally agree with you, like the style of how Pope is doing this, I don't think helps Kalani at all. What's yours, Matt? What's your something that he can't take away from?
So I'm going to actually disagree with your point on scheme. I think, and but maybe I'm just looking at it differently because my reasoning behind it is some similar things as what you just said about recruiting. I think it is easier to flip a scheme in a basketball program than it is on a football program because you've got a smaller number of pieces, and it takes longer, I believe, to flip a scheme in a football program. And I think it's more complicated because of the number of players that you're looking at and what your recruiting pool actually looks like, right? So, you know, you may have geographically or numbers wise a comparable type of recruiting pool, but at the end of the day, the number of slots you're trying to fill on a basketball team versus a football team are just not the same. And so, you know, I think that Pope's ability to install a scheme and go find players that meet that consistently, it's just easier to do in basketball than it is in football. So I don't know that he can take this whole, the impact that scheme has had on the success there and the way that Pope has done it is transferable to a football program.
I will just disagree with you. Heard of Central Florida? They flipped to a national championship basically in a year by changing scheme on the offensive side of the football. You're right. It's not as easy to do. But there are lots of examples of coordinators coming in and flipping schemes and having massive changes in results one year to the next with the exact same roster of players or very similar roster of players. So it's harder to do, but there's lots of teams that have done it well in the last 20 years. So let's not go back further than that because I don't know how relevant, you know, ancient history is, but I think you can do that. I mean, Scott Frost did it at UCF. Now, he hasn't been able to replicate that at Nebraska, to be fair. But I think...
But like, what's this guy in Minnesota, right? Which is another good example.
Yeah, Minnesota's a good example. I think, you know, quite frankly, people aren't going to like this, but Grimes has transformed the BYU offense. Maybe not as much as we wanted, but they are way better the last 2 years than they were under Demmer. Right? I mean, it's massively better than it was under Detmer. We had massive red zone problems last year, but you know, would you at any point trade the Detmer offense for the Grimes one?
No, I take the Grimes offense every time.
Yeah. And you know, if Tuiaki's defenses had maintained being as good as they had been during his first few seasons, I think we win 10 games last year, right? Last year it became, you know, more of a defensive problem than an offensive problem. But, you know, you look at some defenses too that have changed their identities pretty quickly. But your point is well spoken in that it's not as easy because you've got that's the whole problem with the comparisons between basketball and football is, you know, you're talking about five guys out on the floor, 8 to 10 guys that you're playing, period. And that's the only people you have to get bought in. In football, at minimum, you've got to get, for an offensive scheme change, you got to get, what, 15 guys bought in? Probably 15, more than 20? That. Probably, yeah, 20. Probably same need, on defense.
So you need 30 or 40 guys to all buy in.
All buy into what you're doing.
And some of those guys are buying in knowing they're not, they may not see the field very much.
Correct. Right. So, again, I think there are things that Kalani could look across the office and learn from Mark Pope. I think, though, as fans, our desire to transfer those things is way easier to do in our brains than it is to do for a coach.
And another thing I'm just going to throw out here, too, though, is the difficulty of the dive that we're asking these two coaches to do is not the same. Comparatively speaking, in their spheres, I think that the schedule that the basketball team is up against and right. the schedule that the football team is up against are not the same. So that makes the comparison very difficult.
Well, and you get a better chance as a coach in basketball to adjust in season. Football is short.
Oh, for sure. Right?
For football sure. is short, and in basketball, I think once you get to the tournament, this may not be as true, but in basketball, you see the best coach teams rise to the top over time because there's right. just
and they
more
get hot
games.
At the end of the season.
Well, yeah, maybe, but I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about over the course of a 30-game season, 30-plus games, you just because you have more of a sample size, better coached, better teams – are going to end up at the top of a conference ledger, right? As opposed to in football, you only need one really random thing to happen for a team to not hit their potential, right? And I don't mean injuries because that could happen in either sport. I mean a bad bounce of a football or basketball. You know, in basketball, Duke can have their terrible game and still win the conference. In football, Alabama has their terrible game. They don't win the conference, LSU does, right? Because there's just not enough games to recover. So to your point, you know, the difficulty of the dive is just, it's so different. It sometimes becomes just an exercise of futility to even compare them because of how different the sports are and how different the execution of a coaching staff. And think of the coaching staff. That Pope has to lead versus the one Kalani has to lead, right? Much smaller staff for Pope, so to get right. even your coaching staff all on the same page is way easier. If you hire right, if you don't, then it's probably not that easy. Anyway, all right. Well, Matt, that's all we've got for today. Fun show started out with giggles, and then we didn't have many giggles after that.
I'm glad you got yourself under control. I'm proud of you. Way to be an adult.
Sure. Yeah, I've tried to adult now and again.
Way to pull it together there. I was worried in the beginning.
As you should have been. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. You can, of course, support the podcast at patreon.com/riseandshout. We will be back next week with another show covering other things. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!